Blog Talk Radio.
Mr. Pop.
Views and opinions of this show do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of this network and its affiliates.
It's time for another edition of the Sport Diehards with the Snowman. Your host, Steve Itzkowitz. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another dish of the Sport Diehards. I am your host, Steve Itzkowitz. And yes, we are bringing them back. Week number two, the Snowman. And it's going to be a blizzard of hot takes, hot opinions, and plenty of biting sports talk for about the next hour to an hour and a half. We have on tap, has resting NBA players for primetime games gone too far? NFL free agency, why are running backs not being signed? Have running backs been devalued to the point where that maybe the NFL should consider not having running backs on their rosters at all? We're going to talk about that and the difficulty of some running backs to get a contract. We're also going to talk about Tony Romo. Is he staying? Is he going? If he leaves, how is he going to leave? Where is he going to end up? We're going to try to sort that mess because last week it was supposed to be resolved, but alas, as with the Cowboys, everything there is anything but predictable. And we are also going to talk about, of course, I'll save the best for last, the NCAA tournament. It is upon us. The Field of 68 has been released, and we're going to give you our final four picks and then our pick to win the national championship. A lot to talk about, so we're just going to get right into it. Let me bring on my man, my partner. This is a guy who is doubted by many except myself because you've got to recognize true talent when you see it. He is one of the best that does this in the world of podcasting. He is very determined and he's very opinionated and knows his sports. And we're honored to have him here with the Sport Diehards and a member of the Radio AFS family. He is the Snowman himself, Mr. Brian Snow. Brian, welcome back to the show. How was your weekend?
Busy to say the least, but thanks for having me back. It's a joy and a pleasure.
Well, it's a joy and a pleasure to have you, and let's just get into the first topic here. Coming out of the NBA over the weekend.
Before we do that, I got to play something because people – I made a prediction, and I know we're going to get into this later on in the show, but anyone who knows me will recognize this fight song. As I get a cue, I'll play it later. Let's get into what we're gonna kick off the show with.
If you want to play it now, you can. Otherwise, it's entirely up to you.
Play it during the college basketball segment. Play it during college basketball.
Fair enough. Yeah, we're gonna. And usually we would lead off with this, but I wanted to get the NBA stuff out of the way. I wanted to leave with the bad news first, the annoying news, the story that's not really a story. And lead up to the good part in the NCAA tournament, because Lord knows there'll be plenty to talk about there. Go ahead and get into the NBA segment and get that out of the way. The Golden State Warriors had, you know, the NBA has gone to a Saturday night showcase game in the last couple of years. And last Saturday night showcase game was between the Golden State Warriors and the San Antonio Spurs, the two best teams in the Western Conference, the two teams expected to vie for the Western Conference bid to the NBA Finals. Well, the Golden State Warriors lately have not looked like themselves, especially since Kevin Durant's injury. Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, and Steph Curry have struggled to shoot the ball, and the Warriors have looked a little bit mortal at this particular point. Is it because Kevin Durant is not in there, or is this because they've hit a snag at a time of the year where you would think they wouldn't? Well, Steve Kerr decided that even though these Spurs are hot on the trail of potentially catching the Warriors, and now have the tiebreaker after winning that game to pass them as the best team in the Western Conference and have home court advantage throughout. Steve Kerr decided to rest Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, and Steph Curry against the Spurs, and the Spurs proceeded to blow them out, leaving a bad game for television, and more importantly, a chance for the fans, even though they were probably happy for the victory, denying them a chance to see some of the great Warrior shooters that a lot of people would love to see in their arena. So, and a lot of people on one side under our side with Steve Kerr saying he's got to do what's best for the team. A lot of people are saying that what Steve Kerr did should absolutely be reprimanded because at the end of the day, it's all about the fans and the networks that are making sure that these players have a platform by which to appeal to and are making all the money that they are allowed to make. Brian, Let me just ask you quite simply, which side do you fall on? Do you side with the Warriors and benching those players, or do you side with the fans and the network saying, hey, this isn't right?
First of all, the network should have seen this coming, especially given the fact that the Warriors are struggling, and I hate using that term with the Warriors, without Kevin Durant. But this is the best word I can come up with. These pseudo fans do not seem to understand that an 82-game season with these superior athletes can take a toll on them. I'm totally with Steve Kerr on this. Here's a history lesson. Remember 2013 when Greg Popovich, the same coach that Steve Kerr faced, brought this to light and people started saying he should be reprimanded, and David Stern took the bait from the media and fined Greg Popovich, and Greg Popovich gave him the big finger and still rested his players. It's a common practice. It's become a common practice. If the fans don't understand that all the ticket that you paid for guarantees you is a basketball game, no stars, then maybe you need to read the fine print before you drop your money and make the purchase.
I'm with you in this respect, that ultimately Steve Kerr does not work for the NBA. He works for the Golden State Warriors. And he absolutely has to do what's best for his particular players. And I'm sure Warriors fans feel much the same way, even though maybe they did not like the fact that they rested them against the Spurs, a team that's hot on their trail. That said, I feel bad for the fans for the simple fact that the fans have no idea. And I used to, I actually told someone, they asked me, how can fans anticipate this? If it's a second half of a back-to-back and LeBron James and the Cavs are playing, one of those also-ran teams, maybe anticipate that those players are not going to play in that game and don't buy those tickets. I think as a fan, you have to look at the schedule, look at the games that you want to see these players see, and you have to try to anticipate, if these players are going to play it or not. If there's any doubt in your mind whatsoever, then you trust your instincts and you don't buy that ticket. Now, this was a little bit of a surprise because, again, it was a primetime game. And honestly, I was surprised by that. So I understand the reaction of the fans. I understand the reaction of the networks and the sports talk radio guys. I mean, they were belaboring this on Fox Sports Radio on Saturday. And it got to a point where, like, guys, and I started to think, you guys have created, a perception around the league that it's player driven. Well, a player-driven league, this is what players can do. This is what coaches can do with players. If it was more of a team-driven game like the NFL, because you don't see NFL players typically rest players, and if they do, they'll usually cost themselves in the playoffs. That's how it goes in the NBA. It's a player-driven league. As a fan, you have to understand that. You have to adjust, and you have to try to figure out when these players might not play in games, the second half of a back-to-back against an also-ran team, Or something to that effect. So as a fan, you almost have to be wise as to what to, because there are patterns here, and most of the patterns lie in players missing the second half of a back-to-back against a team that, quite frankly, doesn't amount to a hill of beans to most people outside of the town that team plays in. So you've got to be smart about it. So I feel bad for the fans, but you're going to see a team, not a particular player. And if you're going to see a particular player, if you're going to narrow it down to seeing one player in particular, then the question you have to ask yourself is that, what if that player is rested? What if they get injured? Then what? These are the best athletes in the world. So as a fan, you've got to be a little smart, and you've got to ask these questions, and you've got to try to anticipate what may happen if you're narrowing down the NBA experience that you want to have to just seeing one player or even two. Is that fair to say?
And it's very fair to say. And this is another thing, it's a point that you mentioned before. The fans need to understand the scheduling, okay? Now, here's where I go off on the networks. Will you please eliminate the Saturday showcase? It does no good for the players nor the fans. Since the showcase premiered two seasons ago, the viewership has been in the toilet, period.
Mm-hmm.
Only time you see NBA on Saturday nights is, I don't know, during the playoffs, perhaps. At least that's how I saw it when the NBA was on NBC, or better yet, CBS. This is a product of of a pair of mouse ears being in ESPN's grill for the past 20 years. You want to create a Saturday showcase that could, in essence, and it's done that the past 2 years, interrupt a regular schedule. Stick to the Sunday broadcast, will you please?
Well, after the NFL season especially, and by the way, and you're right, when I started seeing Saturday Night Showcase, it's like there is no way, you know, in the social life that I have that I am going to, unless I happen to be at a sports bar or wherever I may be, maybe I might catch glimpses of it, but or as an Uber driver, I'm usually working on Saturday night and listen to sports talk radio. But
right.
A Saturday night showcase for the NBA is akin to airing the semifinal of the college football playoff on New Year's Eve. You know, and those games haven't been highly rated either. Thank God the championship games have been great.
Yep.
And those are on a Monday night, which is absolutely perfect. Because Monday night, as we know, is a great night for football, thanks to the popularity over the decades of Monday night football. But having an NBA showcase game on a Saturday is the same thing as having the college football playoff semifinal on New Year's Eve, the top party night of the year. And I know this because as an Uber driver, I made nearly $500 that night. People weren't staying home to watch those games. Maybe they caught it at a bar they were watching, or, you know, and they caught glimpses, but they weren't entirely focused on the game. But that is absolutely crazy. And the NBA, you know, has sent it to themselves now that the NFL is off. I understand they don't want to broadcast Sunday NFL games while the NFL or Sunday games while the NFL is going on, except maybe before the Super Bowl they could broadcast a game in the morning, which they've done. But once the NFL season ends in early February, the NBA, and that's the time for the NBA to really make hay, it's better for them to broadcast on that day. So, yeah, to your point, when they came over the NBA Saturday Night Showcase, my first question was why? What are you thinking about? I mean, and sometimes we're so concerned about being different that we actually go too far. Sometimes it's better to do things the way they should be done, the way that makes sense. Yeah, it might not be different, but if it makes sense, who the hell cares if it's different or not?
You know what? Since the contract was, for lack of a better term, stolen by ESPN, I can't watch the NBA as intently as I once did. I mean, I'll pay attention to a TNT game once in a blue moon, once in a great while, but to be perfectly honest, as much of a fan as I am of the Warriors and the Spurs, because they play team basketball, as we discussed before, I can't do it. I can't invest fully in a product that has gone down the toilet with the major culprit being a certain four-letter network that I can't stand watching.
Well, you know what's funny is have you ever seen the movie Bullworth with Warren Beatty?
Yeah.
And Halliwell?
Yes.
You know, I remember when Warren Beatty appeared at the Power Brokers of Beverly Hills, those that were, you know, movie producers and entertainment moguls and people like that. And Warren Beatty once made a remark during that is that, you know, how much money do you guys really need? You know, the money just turns all this stuff to crap. It's all about the money. And I liken that to when TV, you know, really started to rear its ugly head in the world of sports about the early 90s, I would say, is when this began, when the NFL was really starting to fly high with traditional free agency and so on and so forth. And Jordan, riding high at that particular time. And baseball in the 90s was off the chain with all the home runs and the strike. And, of course, Cal Ripken, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa. And the 90s were rip, rock, and roll. And, you know, it was all shown on TV. But all this stuff on TV has turned it to crap. It's all about the money now. It's no longer about the sports. You know, we have the upstairs report, the downstairs report, the pregame show, the halftime show, the postgame show, the sideline report, the third quarter interview, the first quarter interview. I mean, the media has sunk its claws into sports so much so that it has left scars that will never, ever, ever be healed. And the media has to live with this stuff. I mean, they're part of the reason why sports is not as much fun as it used to be, why it's not watchable, is because it's become all about the money. And when it's more about the money than it is about the quality of the product, then this is what you get. And, you know, at the end of the day, the media has to live with this kind of thing.
And I'll tell you one event that was so sacred in basketball, and it's become such a terrible farce. The All-Star Game.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
The All-Star NBA All-Star game has turned to complete crap. And part of the reason is when it made the switch from NBC to TNT. I can't stand the All-Star game. I can't stand it. At least with NBC, it looked like it was fun to participate in, and you actually got to sit down in front of a television and watch it free.
Putting major sporting events, and thank God, you know, they haven't done this for the Super Bowl, the World Series, or the NBA Finals yet. God willing, they won't. But
that's a very, very good point.
And, you know, no one can find the NHL because the NHL is buried on some cable network that doesn't amount to a hill of beans like the Sacramento Kings. It's just there's such a drive for TV revenue that, you know, that networks and teams and leagues are going to do what they do to generate that. But what they don't realize is that they turn their product into nothing more than a few crisp dollar bills that eventually, you know, at the end of the day, don't really mean anything in the grand scheme of life. So it's just disappointing. And I can't watch the NBA in the regular season either, part because of the Lakers have been so bad. I mean, I listen to them on radio, but when I start to feel like they're not playing that well, or they're starting to fall into a big deficit, I kind of turn it off, and then I'll turn it back on later to see if they came back. But it's really, and the one and done rule also for the NBA of having guys come into the NBA after one year, I don't like that either. I come from the old school where guys should stay for at least 2 years, if not three. You know, like with the NFL, you have to be 3 years removed from high school. So it's just all these things, all these progressions that have actually affected the quality of the game. That's what it comes down to.
You mentioned the 90s. Anybody that watched the NBA during the 90s remembers this. How can you not get hyped to watch game for 2 hours
the
on
NBA
NBC
on
when
NBC,
you hear that?
When Bob Costas and Pat Riley had that show before Pat Riley returned to the sideline with the New York Knicks, that was one of the best NBA shows out there, actually. I mean, Bob Costas is a master of what he does. Pat Riley is a great, great coach and obviously is certainly credible when it comes to basketball and success of basketball. I love that show. I love that theme song.
And many people may not recognize this one. So are these. Anybody who watched the NBA on CBS recognizes that team and all the great narration Brent Musburger would put into it leading up to a big game.
Dick Stockton and Billy Cunningham, when they did the 1988 NBA Finals. Lakers, Celtics, Dick Stockton is another great broadcaster, actually, and he's still around, but I don't hear him nearly as much as I'd like to. But obviously, Brent Musburger being an all-time heavyweight, Dick Stockton, no lightweight himself, and Billy Cunningham, the old great coach of the Sixers, who was a great partner for Dick Stockton in the late 80s, doing all those NBA playoff games. So another great memory of NBA play. I love those days. I miss those days.
You miss those days. I mean, my goodness. How can you not miss those days? Anybody who watched the golden era of the NBA, I believe, and this is just one man's opinion. This is just from the time I watched. From 1979 to 1998 was the greatest era of NBA basketball. Think of the Hall of Famers. And I'm not disrespecting, nor will I ever disrespect anybody that came before that era, because there were some great eras. Hell, Bill Russell, 11 championships. Tom Heinsohn, 10 championships. All right. The Iceman, George Gervin, Julius Erving. But I'm talking about from 79 to 98, when Magic Johnson and Larry Bird showed up, Julius Erving got his ring, Michael Jordan came in 1984, and you had more team basketball in a single night than you can get in a single season with this version of the NBA, period.
Yeah, and also maybe the greatest dunk contest ever, 1988, Jordan versus Dominique in Chicago.
Chicago Stadium, baby.
Thanks to Magic Johnson and Larry Bird, they took NBA Finals games off tape delay. You know, and they came up with the 2-3-2. They came up with the 2-3-2 format, so the network started to see the value of broadcasting Bird Magic games in the NBA Finals. So the 80s is the creme de la creme of NBA basketball, in my opinion. I had the pleasure of watching the Lakers win 3 championships in the area when I caught on to them in 1984 as a fan. But those days are long
gone. You know what?
And the big difference is TV, social media, branding, and the mentality of players today and coaches and so on and so forth, more about protecting players, like putting pitchers on a pitch count in baseball, especially young pitchers, so that they don't throw their arms out early or go through Tommy John surgery. You know, there's more of an emphasis on protecting the investment than there is on, you know, just letting you guys go out there and do what they do, and, you know, which is better for the game, better for the fans, better for everybody.
It sure is. It sure is. The same can be said about the NFL. The same can be said about Major League Baseball. Up until the year for me that everything changed with the rest of the major pro sports, the pin I can put on it is 1995. Because with that year, and I'll go back to the NBA, this is actually, it's the NHL that had a lockout. I mistake myself here. But Major League Baseball had a strike. And then 1995, you can just slowly see the tide begin to turn and that slippery slope start to form with more players thinking about themselves and not the good of the team. After the Bulls won it all in 1998 and then the silly 50-game season happened in 1999, that's when I kind of pulled away.
I'd say you hit the nail on the head. But it is what it is. This is the area that we live in now. We have to make the best of it until we figure out a way to make it more about the game again than it is about all the other things surrounding sports and the crossover aspect of sports now. I mean, it's just something we're going to have to deal with. Other than that, we should stop being sports fans altogether and just say the hell with it and find something else to be passionate about, which would be easier said than done for guys like us. So, but
that's why I love more college sports than pro sports right now, especially given the players and all the sports that I watch that have spoiled me rotten. All right?
Speaking of the NFL, you brought up the NFL before. Why can't, you know, Eddie Lacy, Latavius Murray, Adrian Peterson, Jamal Charles, LeGarrette Blount, run stuffers like Dontari Poe and Benny Logan, why can't these guys get signed right now? You know, what's I mean, is the NFL gone clearly anti-running back, or why can't these guys get signed as viable members of a football team?
Well, their injuries precede their reputation. Adrian Peterson is a prime example. I'll take it back a little bit. You know, a running back that had a breakout year, then an injury cost him the rest of his career, and nobody would sign him? Does the name Jamal Anderson ring a bell?
Yeah. Atlanta Falcons. 1998 when they made a Super Bowl run. Then the following year it just went to crap.
And that should answer your question.
It makes a lot of sense.
Their injuries precede them. You know, a popular saying is your reputation precedes you. Their reputation for injury precedes them. Jamal Anderson is who I will outline, had a great season in 1998. I believe over 1,800 yards. Of course, I'm speaking of the Dirty Bird.
Yeah.
Blew out his knee in Dallas, hasn't recovered, and there eliminates the running back. There eliminates him getting another contract. Injuries precede them, especially in football.
Well, yeah, and that's part of it. But another part of it is that we have undervalued the running game so much that literally teams see it as, well, we have to have running backs on the roster, but, man, if we didn't have to, would we, especially if we have a great quarterback? And that's why you still need good running backs in this league, because even though it's a quarterback-driven league, there's only really 10 quarterbacks in the league that I can count that are worthy of that designation as being a quarterback-driven league. You know, most of the quarterbacks in the NFL just aren't good right now. You know, and we can name 10 on our fingers. So you're still gonna have, but so that's part of it. But also, you've got a deep you've got a deep stable of running backs coming out of the NFL draft with Joe Mixon, who might be the top one of them all, probably gonna fall because of the domestic violence incident and the videotape. You know, he's probably gonna fall to a third round pick, maybe even a fourth round pick. So you've got that. So it's just bad timing for these running backs. But at the end of the day, you have to have running backs on your roster that can, you know, allow an offensive line to really dominate a defensive line. Because they say when an offensive line is at its most effective is when able to run the block and smash the opposing defensive line, which really gets them going. And then when it comes to pass blocking, it pretty much takes care of themselves. So there's still value in running the football in the NFL. And in the NFL playoffs, if you can run as much as you pass, you've got a great chance to win that game because you always keep a good defense off balance that way and not be one-dimensional. What happened with the Falcons. When the Falcons went away from the running game in the Super Bowl, look what happened to them. They were going great with that in the first half, went away from the second half, and New England just passed their way back into the game and eventually won that game. So there's still place for a running game in this league, but with these guys, the timing for them right now is just awful.
Don't remind me. Oh, good grief. You know, a position that has been eliminated in the offense that needs to come back? The fullback.
You know, the Niners just signed a fullback to a $5.25 million contract. A guy named Jurkic, I want to say his name is, and making him a high-paid fullback. So Kyle Shanahan seems to believe in the value of a fullback. So it could be that could start a trend because Kyle Shanahan might be the brightest offensive mind in football right now. So we'll see what kind of impact that has.
Wait. Well, who's his papa? Who was an offensive coordinator
Mike
for the
Shanahan.
49ers?
Mike Shanahan, yeah, and, who obviously is a big believer in a power running game.
And he had two of them, Tom Rathman, William Floyd, who the Cowboys have in their run in the 90s. The Moose, Darrell Johnson.
Emmitt Smith, Darrell Johnson.
The Bears. What the Bears, when they won in 85, Walter Payton was the feature back. Who was their fullback? Matt Sui. I already mentioned Tom Rathman. I mean, the fullback is an undervalued position. It's essentially been eliminated, and I blame Bill Belichick for that one. But at the same time, thank you, Kyle Shanahan, for putting value in a position that needs to come back. That's another reason why running backs aren't getting enough looks. This league has become so pass-happy, it's not even funny. And Kyle Shanahan, like Jim Harbaugh before him, like George Seifert before him, like Steve Mariucci before him, and, of course, the late, great Bill Walsh. The West Coast offense is a running offense, if a lot of people don't realize it. The West Coast offense is a running offense. I mean, you get down to the blood, the mud, and the guts, in the immortal words of Keith Jackson, and you just make plays. The 49ers with
that
signing.
Well, it's also a timing offense in terms of passing and routes and, you know, coordination between the wide receiver and the quarterback. But, yeah, at its core, it's basically a running offense and incorporates elements of a passing game that's very timing-oriented, very rhythm, and a lot of fun to watch at that.
Yeah, they are. But I like the fact my favorite team is the 49ers. Joe Montana made me a fan for life. But I love the fact when the passing would the passing would be there and everybody would be in fear of it, then they would just cross you up. Like, hey, Roger Craig, here, hold this. Get you 6 or 7 yards. Tom Rathman, get you the extra yards needed to move the chains. I mean, the 49ers were so famous, even though Montana was the man and later Steve Young, the 49ers were so famous of running that sweep that you think you could stop for only 3 yards, and the next thing you know, you're chasing Roger Craig.
A man you did not want to chase, by the way, especially with some of the blockers, upfield blockers that the Niners had, and John Taylor, Jerry Rice, those receivers that were willing to block upfield, along with the 49ers offensive lines that were always underrated but always really, really good. And a crucial part of the Niners' success in the 80s and the 90s with all the Super Bowls that they won. So it's...
Yeah, man, the 49ers had one of the most complex offenses ever. Green Bay started it with the 60s. The Steelers continued it in the 70s. But if anybody put a West Coast offense plus running game on the map, it's the 49ers. Everybody else just followed suit.
I miss those days, God. And maybe Shanahan can bring back some of those days, actually, and give the Niners a balanced attack. Because at the end of the day, I know what wins in the NFL. You've got to have balance. You have to do both things well. So those teams that are, you know, going to lowball these running backs or lowball offers, that's fine. But at the end of the day, having a running back that can get it done for you on first and second down and make it easy for you to – you know, and avoid obvious passing situations on third down. There's still a lot of value in that. So the NFL team's got to be really careful not to get to the point where they don't see running back at the bottom part of the game, because it very much is.
Oh, man. It's so vital to have a great running back. You know why Adrian Peterson has fallen off since his 2,000-yard season? He hasn't had anybody blocking for him. He hasn't had that fullback or that ultra back on some occasions. It's not. Here we go again, rehashing a point, but it's not the same to watch anymore.
Well, maybe he should go to San Francisco then, because they just committed to a fullback over there. So maybe he should look to sign with San Francisco on a one-year deal. I'd take that as a Niner fan. What the hell? Take a one-year flyer on him. See how it works out. I thought the Niners are coming in with expectations anyways. So maybe he should consider going that route. But he's going to Seattle.
He might end up going back to Minnesota.
You could end up back in Minnesota on a very favorable deal for the Vikings. You know, that's what the talk is, that these guys will end up going back to their old teams for a one-year deal as a chance to prove themselves and then maybe get a payday the following year. So it's – I mean, that's how down teams are on signing running backs right now, you know, to contracts these running backs are looking for. So either you've got to take what you can get or you got to retire. You know, you can't have it both ways if you're Adrian Peterson or Jamal Charles.
Exactly. And I feel for both of those guys, you know, not getting an offer. That's ridiculous. Two of the most premier running backs in the NFL, and neither of them have been signed yet. What's wrong with this picture?
That's the same problems Ezekiel Elliott is going to face one day. And speaking of the Cowboys, Tony Romo, Ezekiel Elliott, I got to get into these things here. We'll certainly follow the deterioration of the perception of the NFL running back as we go along here. But in the meantime, Tony Romo, he was supposed to be out last week. He was supposed to be cut. Wasn't cut, no trade, and apparently the top trade partners for Dallas, Denver, and Houston have drawn a line in the sand and saying that they're not going to give up high draft picks to get a quarterback that might not last beyond one offensive series, because if with a bad hit, he could easily go down again. So what's the end game with Tony Romo, do you think? Do you think that he ultimately stays on the Dallas roster the next season, which would be absolutely insane? Or do you think the Cowboys cut him? Or do you think they finally trade him for less than what they expected to get him, just to get him off the roster so that they can move on with, you know, the new era of great players that they had over there in Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott, and focus on the business of getting a pass rusher in there to see if they could contend for a Super Bowl this year? What do you think?
Do we have to talk about Tony Romo? Yeah, because it's kind of on the docket. Okay.
No, we don't have to, but, you know.
It's on the docket. It's on the docket.
And I'm tired of talking about Tony Romo, too. But seriously, I mean, last week was just baloney. You know, it was just absolute and utter baloney. You know, I read definitive reports, and nothing came to fruition. It's like, who the hell are covering these teams here? You know, I fake news left and right. You know, so, and that's what really pisses me off about this stuff is that he was supposed to be cut last week. I mean, is Jerry Jones trying to have it both ways? Seriously.
It's Jerry Jones.
Or is the media just seriously, they're messing with people.
It's Jerry Jones, number one. Number two, it's Tony Romo, who's, you know something, y'all don't seem to realize, and I'm talking about the people that are outside listening to us, watching in, that think, oh, they know everything. Tony Romo's career began with a mistake, a fumbled snap on a field goal attempt, for God's sakes. That's how his career began. And yet he's getting off. He's been oft injured. There were times where he put up the he could put up the most passing yards in the NFL. Hell, he dueled Peyton Manning blow for blow. But then what happened? He threw an interception. Did you really expect when the Cowboys named Tony Romo the starter moons ago? Did y'all really expect him to carry you to the end game, which is the big one in February? I sure as hell didn't. So this is my thought on Tony Romo, and this is probably the only time I will express this thought until I see something solid, which we haven't yet, and we probably won't until August. Tony Romo, hang him up. Hit the road, Jack. Take a broadcasting job and be done with it. Because the Cowboys are going to dangle you in front of everybody, which ain't fair to you and not fair to them because you already got your backfield with Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott. All right, they're going to dangle you in front of everybody, and everybody's going to look at the numbers and not the injuries and say, oh, we can use Tony Romo on our roster. He's 36 years old. I may be wrong on that age, but he's up there in age.
Maybe
all right?
Not.
I wouldn't take that chance. If I were Tony Romo, I would say, you know what? It's been real. It's been fun. It hasn't been real fun. I'm out.
Tony Romo, where he began, as an undrafted free agent out of Northern Illinois, discovered by Bill Parcells, a running back-oriented coach. You want to talk about a guy that believed in the running game, a defense, and creating your passing
game off
of that? Discovered Tony Romo. And Tony Romo has gone on to a very nice career considering where he started. And the only reason why, you know, people are hollering right now, and the best thing that happened for Tony Romo is that when DeMarco Murray had that breakout season, we remember when the Cowboys were going to draft Johnny Manziel, but Stephen Jones talked Jerry Jones out of it, and they drafted Zach Martin instead as an offensive lineman who's one of the best in the game. And DeMarco Murray had a 1,900-yard season, and Tony Romo didn't throw nearly as many interceptions but had maybe his best season because he was playing in a balanced offense with a great offensive line, a great running game. Too bad the defense wasn't good enough. You know, they might have gone and made a Super Bowl in that year, or if that Dez Bryant catch had stood against the Green Bay Packers in that second-round playoff game. But – that's really why Tony Romo's been dangling around like he is, because people believe that if you put him with a team with a really good offensive line, a really good running game, he could have the same kind of success that he had that year with Zach Martin, DeMarco Murray, you know, Jason Garrett, and all of them. And that's why he's being dangled around so much. But the Cowboys have to make a decision. And the decision shouldn't be to have him on the roster next season, because it is an it would defy intelligence, and the league should build an investigation against Jerry Jones for just utter stupidity. I mean, you know, if he continues to lead the Cowboys like this, they're never going to get to where they're desperately trying to go, but they're always going to be a really talked-about team. You know, they're more concerned about headlines, and they seem to be in doing what's best for the team and giving them the best chance to win. And part of that is letting Tony Romo go to find out if he can make it somewhere else. And then going from there, I mean, this defies logic to the point where I'm surprised I can talk about it as intelligently as I am, because I just don't get it. I don't get it. You know, I mean, seriously, is Jerry Jones trying to convince me that 2 + 2 = 5 now? Is that it? You know, what the hell is wrong with him?
He needs a step down. All right, let's just call it for the way we see it. You built your dynasty in the 90s. You did good in drafting Zeke and Dak. Step out of the way, please. Put somebody competent in that position. All right, you don't need to be in the spotlight anymore. You did your damage. You got your Super Bowls. You did your damage. Now let somebody else bring them back to prominence. You don't need to be in the spotlight anymore, Jerry Jones. Okay? Talk about it, and you said he needs to have his head examined. He needed his head examined a few years ago.
He's a modern day Al Davis. You know, That's all I can say. I mean, all those, you know, those Raider teams that were really good up until 2003 when the tailspin began and they were out of the playoffs all those years up until last season. You know, and mind you, you know, for a while that was the Cowboys, actually. You either getting the playoffs and not winning or not getting in whatsoever, and it's it all starts at the top.
That was the latter half.
You know, it all starts at the top. An NFL team, or the NFL being as team-driven as it is, if you have bad ownership and management, you are more screwed mm-hmm. than a $2 crack whore on a Friday night in West Hollywood. I mean, there's just no question about it. And you know, just give it up.
Please.
God willing, we're praying for a resolution. And by the way, as a Niner fan, if the Cowboys want to continue to do business in this regard, fine by me. That's what I was. So as a Niner fan, I'm glad that Jerry Jones still seems to want to have it both ways. But from a pure mm-hmm. objective analyst standpoint, you know, if I met Jerry Jones, I'd be like, Jerry, I admire your success. You're great at marketing. What the hell are you thinking about when it comes to Tony Romo? And then put a drink in his hand, and maybe he'll tell me the truth after a couple of shots of his favorite vodka or whatever it is that he drinks these days. My God.
I think he had that drink in his hand when the Super Bowl was hosted at AT&T Stadium and all the seats froze. Mm. I still don't know how the hell they got 103,000 people in that joint, and it was cold. The seats were freezing.
Yeah.
People couldn't see the game. And somehow Jerry Jones is just
There's not a lot to do over there. I mean, Dallas is a fun town, but, you know, there's not a lot to do over there in the Metroplex. I mean, that's the thing, you know, in Texas is football. So when the Cowboys, when there's an event going on over there, you know, people are going to show up regardless. You know, that's a cultural phenomenon over there, that stadium and that area. I've been there. It's a nice area. I've met a lot of nice people. I was out there 2 weeks when I worked for a company, which they sent me out to a training seminar for 2 weeks out there, and it was lovely. But at the end of the day, that's the thing out there. That is a cultural phenomenon. It is what it is. And that's why I live here in Southern California, and that's all I got to say about that. I'm sure you're glad you live in Chicago. Metroplex. The Metroplex is a euphemism for cowboy mania run amok.
That name alone, Frank. Hey, you want to go to the Metroplex?
Yeah.
Hell no.
Yeah. That's three cities in one area, actually. That's Fort Worth, Arlington, and Dallas. That's what that means. And Fort Worth from Dallas is about 45 minutes, and they have steers. You know, in Old Town Fort Worth, it's kind of fun. I went down there on a weekend, and, you know, they had steers on the street and people riding them and kind of handling them, and it was kind of cool. It made me think of a big fat steak that I had that day. You know, with a schooner of beer. I mean, it was awesome. But trust me, Dallas, which is a mini LA, is a far cry from Fort Worth. So the Metroplex refers to nothing more than three cities within an hour of each other, but with vastly different personalities. Arlington is the sports side. Fort Worth is kind of the down home Southern steer. You know, Southern hospitality type of area, and Dallas is a mini LA. Dallas is a mini LA with women walking up and down the street in short skirts and heels, you know, heels that make women taller than I am at 6 feet. So it's you know, they call it the Metroplex for community reasons, but those towns are so starkly different from each other. It'll start you along with the cowboy mania run amok down there. It's amazing.
Yeah, run amok being understated.
And speaking of
good
running
Lord.
Amok.
Uh-oh.
Speaking of running amok, apparently Zeke Elliott exposed a woman's breast at a St. Patrick's Day parade on the 13th. You know, we've often heard as wide receivers as being divas in the NFL and being troublemakers. That said, the worst thing that happened with wide receivers last year was, Odell Beckham Jr. going to a boat in Miami with Justin Bieber on a Monday before a playoff game, if that qualifies for trouble. Well, we have Joe Mixon, who could get drafted as a proven domestic abuser with video. We know what happened with Ray Rice, and now Zeke Elliott is caught exposing a woman's breasts at a St. Patrick's Day parade. Should we now consider running backs as being the true divas and troublemakers of the NFL, given all the things that have happened? And Adrian Peterson as well, with the incident with the switch with his kid. I mean, should we now consider running backs as the divas of the NFL that are the true troublemakers more than wide receivers?
This is the only way I can answer that question.
Big Price is Right fan from back in the day, huh?
You know what? Old school sports, old school game shows, old school cartoons. That's me. I've been told.
Which old school cartoons
so many times,
did you like?
I'm a Looney Tunes.
I'm sorry, go ahead and finish your, go ahead and finish your thought. I just,
To answer your question about which old school, I'm a Looney Tunes maniac. I love my Looney Tunes. I love. Look,
I love Looney Tunes.
I frighten the daylights
out of
my
planets. The kids that. Go
oh ahead. My God! Battle of the Planets. Oh,
the kids
baby.
That became eagles and can make hurricanes and whatnot. I used to pretend to be those guys because as a kid I always wanted to fly. So I used to pretend to be Mark and you know and those guys and I absolutely love that show. I love Mighty Mouse. I loved Electric Company more than Sesame Street with Spider-Man. You know and Looney Tunes obviously. You know Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck and. I used to love the Disney special Christmas showcase every single year. Goofy learns how to ski.
Yes.
Donald's snow fight with his three uncles, Huey, Dewey, Louie, Goofy's first Christmas tree, and of course, Christmas Carol with Scrooge McDuck, Mickey Mouse. I used to love those things every single year.
Yes.
So I love my old school cartoon.
Ah, yes. Oh, heavens, I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot tell you how many times I frightened the daylights out of my mother and had my dad cracking up at the same time by saying, "What's up, Dak?"
This is a fuck you know, just Donald Duck saying, or Daffy Duck saying someone had a speech impediment. Talk about the pot calling the kettle black, no pun intended. Because Donald Duck was certainly black. You know, in coloration,
yeah,
but also personality-wise. You know. And by that, I don't mean African-American. I mean, he just wasn't a very inspirational, positive person to be around, by the way. So, be very clear about that.
He really wasn't.
Just despicable, you know?
How many times has Daffy tried to get the best of Bugs or anybody that's trying to that basically overstaged him on pure talent alone, and you would hear, "You're despicable," at the end of his sentence every single time.
That was his only comeback. The only thing he had a talent for was sitting when he spoke and making no sense whatsoever. Why the season? And then he ends up getting shot by Elmer Fudd.
And Bugs would always flip it around. He'd always flip it around and Daffy would catch it.
Bugs Bunny used to tool with Donald Duck like Michael Jordan tooled with the NBA. So,
let me be more specific. And I know I'm going to make a lot of Knicks fans angry, but they know this to be the truth. Bugs Bunny tooled with Daffy Duck and Elmer Fudd the same way Michael Jordan tooled with John Starks.
No. Brian Russell, I think, would be a better example, actually. The statue shot.
You know what?
You can make a case for either guy, but or Craig Elo. Craig Elo, John Starks.
Thank you.
Brian Russell. The triumvirate of Jordan's primary torturees, for lack of a better way of putting that.
Karl Malone took a couple of shots.
Yeah, they say Hakeem Olajuwon only won his two championships because Jordan retired, got suspended, you know, allegedly for gambling, but they didn't announce it. So, I would argue that even if Jordan won three straight at that point, Hakeem still might have won one or two because to win four or five straight is so difficult in the NBA, you know, with a four-round playoff format. So I argue Hakeem Olajuwon may have won one or two anyways in the middle 90s, but certainly Karl Malone and John Stockton didn't have any such luck.
They didn't have a chance. Pat Riley even said it. Pat Riley said There were teams in the NBA that could be the best teams ever, and they never got a shot at the title because Michael Jordan was playing. All right?
You know who that feels explains, like, yeah.
That explains the 80s in a nutshell with Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, period. The only team that broke through that string until 1989 was the Philadelphia 76ers with Julius Erving.
And the Pistons.
That's it.
And the Pistons, too.
And the Detroit Pistons.
This has kind of came out of nowhere, too. They've won three championships, which is three more than the Jazz, last I checked. And you know what's funny? You know, in modern-day NBA, you know what team fits that? You know what team fits, you know, the Utah Jazz teams of the 90s? And, you know, who in the 80s just couldn't get over Houston? Houston went to a couple NBA finals. They couldn't get over the hump either. So, you know who the Houston of the 80s and the Utah of the 90s is in modern-day NBA parlance? The L.A. Clippers. You know, the L.A. Clippers. You want to talk about bad time. They either blow 19-point leads against Houston with 2 minutes to go in a playoff series, or they can't keep their key guys healthy. Meanwhile, Golden State and San Antonio continue to vie for championships, and even Oklahoma City when Durant was there. The L.A. Clippers feel like a team that, you know, is just never going to win either because they can't get out of their own way, or it's just really, really bad timing for them, or both.
It's both.
Yeah,
it's,
I would agree.
It's both. Not only do the Clippers feel that way, the Oklahoma City Thunder should feel that way for two reasons. Number one, they had the Western Conference, especially after last year. Exactly.
They had them done.
Okay, that's the first reason. The second reason, they should feel like they've been played to the left because of David Stern and Clay Bennett. Imagine the rivalry OKC would have with Golden State if OKC was where they belong, which is Seattle.
Yeah. And hopefully the NBA puts a team back in Seattle because I think that's a hell of an NBA city. So hopefully they find a way to get a team back to Seattle.
They
so.
Should not have.
I argue the Clippers should move to Seattle, actually. You know, Steve Ballmer being a Microsoft guy, go to Seattle, start over. Have your own city, have your own arena, but, you know, chances are he's not going to leave L.A., but – the Clippers should start over in Seattle. Maybe that'll turn their fortune around.
OKC should go back to Seattle and be done with it. That move should not have been made.
Yeah.
That move should not have been made, and the true fans of the NBA know this. That move should not have been made, period. David Stern had no business, for lack of a better term, getting into bed with Clay Bennett in business so they can move the team out of Seattle to OKC. If you knew what the vote was going to be, David Stern, and I truly believe to this day, call me a conspiracy theorist, but I believe to this day that vote would have favored the Supersonics. And all David Stern had to do, if David Stern was so willing to help out the city of New Orleans when the Hornets were displaced for such a long time, have New Orleans and Oklahoma City, you know, as their base. Give Oklahoma City their own team. Don't give them a team with a shared history. That's baloney.
Well, the NBA, you know, David Stern has done things in the past that were none of his business, you know, that didn't stop him anyways. The Chris Paul trade to the Lakers, you may recall. So it's not like David Stern is not capable of this type of thing. And it's not like Seattle is less of a viable NBA city than New Orleans or Charlotte is, for that matter. It's more of a viable NBA. I mean, when I think of Charlotte, I think of University of North Carolina and Duke basketball. We'll certainly get into the tournament next. But I don't know. It's more politics than it is. You know, it's more buddy-buddy, the good old boys network, than it seems to be about doing what makes sense, doing what's right. And it's just wrong. It's wrong having a team in New Orleans, with all due respect. That's a football town. You know, that's a Saints town. I mean, the Pelicans don't amount to a hill of beans over there compared to the Saints. You know, let's face it. And LSU being nearby as well. I mean, that is a football area. And college basketball, too. You know, when LSU college basketball is good. You know, the NBA should want to be in Seattle more than they should want to be in New Orleans, in my opinion, or Oklahoma City, for that matter, another great college area, University of Oklahoma, the Red River Shootout and all that stuff. So,
yep. Yep. Here's what I do as commissioner. Thank you, New Orleans, for participating, but you're out of there. Thank you, OKC, for participating, but you're out of there too. OKC, you go back to Seattle. Let's disperse New Orleans in terms of draft picks with different teams around the league, period. Everybody in Seattle, and I'm going to really make you laugh with this one, everybody in Seattle, the day the Supersonics moved, said three words.
That's all they said?
Okay.
Wow.
Well,
I would expect a lot more.
Well,
anybody
who's watched
Cleveland
Sonics
for the first time.
You know what? Anybody
who's
watched Sonicscape, like I have 100,000 times, and I love that documentary, knows that the city of Seattle said more than three words. Okay. But to keep it clean, you know, 100,000 times over, they had to say, "Are you kidding me?" That was, of course, courtesy of the great Paul Allen, the fabulous voice of the Vikings. And they also had to say this.
That's terrible.
You and your sound buds, man. That's awesome. Oh, man. I'm so glad we hooked up. Oh, that's awesome. I can't wait to hear your sound bites on the NCAA. As a matter of fact, let's go ahead and get in the NCAA tournament. Let's close out the show on that. I'm getting a little bit I've got another phone call I've got to make here soon. We've got to get into this. We're talking cartoons.
Right,
we're talking old school NBA. We're talking how things are versus how they should be. We've gotten into the NFL. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a great show. You're hearing one of the best shows that you could possibly hear on Radio AFS. And Radio AFS, I'm a Sport Diehards. You can follow us, Facebook.com/TheSportDiehards, Facebook.com/RadioAFS. And Brian, plug your stuff.
Oh, man. Find me on Twitter at GoldenVoiceSnow and at ArenaSportsNet. Also find my morning show at SIT Morning for Snowman in the Morning. That's how you can find me. Now that we're at the point where we can talk about something we both absolutely love, I can play this for my team getting in the tournament.
I like this a lot better than the USC fight song. For the record. I'm just saying, I'm thrilled for Northwestern. It's about time. Congratulations.
I'm so happy that NU got it. Not only am I happy that Northwestern is in the tournament, but since we're going to make our predictions, I'm going to make mine right now. The first number one seed that will fall will be Gonzaga.
I totally agree. I mean, I watched that game against, BYU. And the one thing BYU exposed about Gonzaga that game is their stark lack of athleticism. That's going to cost them at some point in the tournament, particularly some of the teams in their browser being athletically superior to them. They're a fundamentally sound team. They don't beat themselves. They play very well under Mark Few, but, you know, you've got to get creative. You've got to be able to score in a variety of ways. I don't see that with them. So I think, you know, they'll get by North Dakota State. I have Arizona coming out of that region, actually, as one Final Four team. I think they are for real coming out of that Pac-12. And one team that's going to give them difficulty potentially in the Sweet 16 if they get that far is, let me see here, they would face, I think they'll beat Northwestern. I think Northwestern can give them a hard time because Northwestern has really good guards. They play well defensively and they don't beat themselves. So.
You know what? Northwestern will beat them. Northwestern will take down Gonzaga.
Fair enough.
Calling it right now. This is a Northwestern team. Although many predict they will not survive the second round when they see Gonzaga, you never know with this team. Northwestern, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm going to say this sentence. And I know this is about as far-fetched as it gets. And I also know this is made on pure, unadulterated emotion and heart. But there is a possibility if NU gets past the first round, they won't stop until they get to Phoenix, Arizona.
And face off against Arizona.
Who do you think comes? Okay, so Northwestern, you think can make a run here, but who comes out of the West as the Final Four representative?
Arizona Wildcats. I mean, I love Northwestern.
Yeah,
we agree there. But Chris Collins said something very, very true at the watch party. Today was the start of Northwestern basketball. And I think it'll be a battle of Wildcats in the Elite Eight.
And any kind of run that they make is going to bode well for the future, recruiting, exposure. So what's more important for Northwestern is that they just take advantage of the opportunity as much as they can and then go from there. But obviously Arizona is, you know, a team that's won championships in the past with Lute Olson. So it's a different mindset. It's a different era. But, it's a great opportunity for Northwestern. Hopefully they'll take full advantage of it.
Yeah, me too, man. Can you imagine the headlines if they get all the way to the Elite Eight? Holy cow.
Yeah, no, I mean, Cinderella. I mean, first time NCAA team goes to the Elite Eight. It wouldn't get any better than that. I mean, that headline alone would be like, what? Who? Like Northwestern? My God, isn't that school more known for their business and their communications program than their athletics? Well, guess what? Athletics are coming around here. So, yeah, that would be a remarkable story just as a first-time NCAA entrant going to the Elite Eight.
If Pat Fitzgerald
– it'd be one of the top stories of the year.
Can help lead the Wildcats – if Pat Fitzgerald can lead the Wildcats not just as a player but also as a coach, anybody remember that 1995 Northwestern team?
I do. 10-2, Rose Bowl. They lost to USC, but
I still growl at that game, man.
Yeah, you and I both. As you silly guy, anyway. So yeah, we'll see what happens. We will see what happens. So Arizona out of the West. Arizona out of the West. But
yes,
yeah,
I have Arizona
seems on the rise. The key is that they build on and they can sustain it over a period of time, which is always the key.
Yeah. Absolutely.
To the East bracket, Villanova trying to repeat as champions. It's hard for me to even say that. I mean, Villanova pulling the upset on North Carolina last year and now being the number one overall seed in this NCAA tournament, Duke at number two, Baylor at number three, and Florida at number four. One team I would say watch out for in the middle of this tournament is Virginia. Who's very sound defensively. So if they score efficiently, then defensively they're as good as anybody gets. That's potentially a team that Villanova could run into on the way to potentially an Elite Eight. But who do you like coming out of the East bracket?
Oh, geez. You know what? I got to ride with them. I got to ride with Villanova. Villanova is – they're not as deep as they were last year. But until someone knocks them out, they're the defending champions.
I haven't watched a lot of college basketball this year, but I followed Duke enough to know that as long as Grayson Allen does not channel his inner Draymond Green, they've got a talented team top to bottom, and obviously we know they're very well coached. And Vegas actually favors Duke to go all the way. In most of the Vegas sports books, they're favoring Duke to go all the way. I'm riding with Vegas. I'm not going all the way. I don't think that's going to happen. We'll get to that momentarily. But I think Duke is coming out of this region over Villanova to go to the Final Four out of the East behind the Vegas sports books here.
I don't, and I'll tell you why. I have the team that will eliminate Duke when they get to the regionals at MSG. That team is the SMU Mustangs.
Oh. Are they still coached by Larry Brown?
30-4
this year, so certainly they seem to know what they're doing down there if you got that many wins. So we'll see what happens. We shall see what happens. But SMU, I think, and like I said, Virginia on the other side of the bracket against Villanova, I think is a tough game for Villanova because it's a similar team. They play similar to how Villanova plays, actually. So
So
that would
if Duke can get by SMU and Villanova can get by Virginia, then we're looking at a clash of number one and number two of Villanova and Duke, and that would be a great game. So we'll see, but I agree that SMU and Virginia could be the teams that they have to beat along the way in order to get that far. Well, the teams that are going to be the toughest for them to beat. So
right.
So you have Villanova, I have Duke out of the East. Out of the Midwest, Kansas at number one, Louisville at number two, number three is Oregon. I really like Oregon. And number four is Purdue. This might be the best regional out of all of them, actually. This is a really, really deep field. We saw what happened to Kansas in the Big 12 tournament, but apparently that did not affect them getting a number one overall seed, which I find startling. That said, Oregon and Miami, by the way, Lord knows Miami is a massive upset. They're a number eight seed, and if Miami gets by Michigan State, which I think will happen, and Kansas gets by Northwestern, Miami could give Kansas a game in the second round. And in the top and bottom have Louisville behind great guard play. Their guard, leads the nation in fields at 60 points a game, and you're getting great guard play, and obviously you're well coached by Rick Pitino. Then you have Oregon kind of lurking in the middle there. This is a really strong bracket. I think Louisville is going to come out of the Midwest behind great guard play, but it'll surprise me if Oregon makes a run because defensively they're good and Dylan Brooks is just as good as it gets. Who do you think is coming out of the Midwest?
Top four, Kansas, Louisville, Oregon, Purdue will all go down. I have a low seed coming out of the Midwest, and that low seed is Michigan.
Tell me why.
Remember 1990 when Loyola Marymount made a run to the Elite Eight off pure emotion alone?
Mm-hmm.
With what Michigan has gone through to get to Washington in the Big Ten tournament, win the Big Ten tournament, there's no reason why they won't carry that all the way to Phoenix, Arizona. If I have to pick one of the top four seeds, it would be Louisville. But I'm going off of pure unadulterated gut instinct, and my instinct says Michigan.
The Elite Eight run that Bo Kimball and that Loyola Marymount team made after Hank Gathers collapsed on that court, which was one of the saddest things I've ever seen in sports, maybe the saddest.
Yeah.
Was remarkable, especially those left-handed foul shots that Bo Kimball took on the first foul shot. But they eventually ran into a buzzsaw by the name of the UNLV running members, NBA players all over that team. And I think that's what Michigan is going to run into because that kind of emotion is only going to carry so far. At the end of the day, talent wins in this tournament, and teams are going to play hard. I mean, let's face it. This is it. You're one and done, so you have to have the mentality that you got to win to move on, and if you don't, you're out. So I think Michigan can ride that for a little while, but I think if you run into a Louisville or an Oregon and I don't believe in Kansas whatsoever. I don't think Kansas has the mental toughness. I just don't like these Bill self-coached teams. With the exception of that 2008 Kansas team that won, they beat all with Merle Chalmers and Brandon Rush. I don't like Bill self-coached Kansas teams because they're almost always going out in the first three rounds. So I don't believe in that team whatsoever. So I think Oregon and Louisville are the two best bets. But Michigan certainly make things interesting, but I think that emotion can only carry them so far. Like that Loyola Marymount team until they ran into UNLV. So we'll see. I'll be rooting for them.
That running Rebel team was on a mission just like Loyola Marymount was. And the wild part about that particular game, the West Regional Final in Oakland, and what a lot of people don't remember, Loyola Marymount scored 101 points in that game. Problem was, UNLV scored 131 in that game.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe the best college basketball game I ever saw, actually, offensively. I mean, just insane. Or that, remember when Loyola Marymount played LSU when Chris Jackson, before he became Mahmoud Abdul-Rayouf, Shaquille O'Neal were there, versus Hank Gathers and Bo Kimball? Wimp Sanderson he was Alabama coach, Jerry Tarkanian. It was just, my Lord, when you got into NBA scores with college basketball games, you didn't know what to do with yourself, actually. It was absolutely thrilling. So,
Paul Winstead
incredible game.
Paul Winstead was Loyola Marymount's coach.
He was the coach of Loyola Marymount. That's right. Thank you for reminding me.
Now,
all right.
Now the most interesting region in this tournament, the South region, which will culminate in Memphis, Tennessee, has North Carolina, Butler, UCLA, and Kentucky as its top four seeds.
Another strong regional.
Mercy. And two of the top four will survive, and neither of them are Kentucky or UCLA.
I would have to agree. I think UCLA, when they run into, let's see here, UCLA will beat Kent State, and then they will catch Dayton, Wichita State. Wichita State is a number 10 seed, is downright scary with that team's ability to score. Yeah, so I think that's a potential problem game for UCLA in the second round if it materializes. We know they can beat Kentucky. They proved that during the regular year. So they get by if they get by Wichita State, then beating Kentucky is not out of the realm of possibility given what happened in the regular season. But then consider North Carolina, which has maybe the best forwards, the best bigs in the entire NCAA tournament. They need more from their backcourt. If they're going to go all the way, which a lot of people are predicting, but as far as their bigs and their forwards and the athleticism of the team, not to mention motivation, losing the way they lost last year. So, you know, they definitely want to turn that around. I think UCLA, unless UCLA consistently scores, is the first team to get to 80 points in whichever game that they are playing. But if their opponent gets 80 points first, they're in trouble. Because defensively, they are not a stalwart, so they've got to get to 80 before their opponent does. If they get to 90, forget about it. But that's the problem for UCLA, is that they've got to basically outscore their opponents and get to 80 before their opponent does. Otherwise, they're going to suffer fate like they suffered against Arizona in the second round of the Pac-12.
Indeed. And I love the fact that Arizona beat UCLA. All right, because a lot of people were talking about a lot of people were talking after UCLA went to the McHale Center and beat Arizona by 5. And everybody was proclaiming UCLA to win the Pac-12 tournament. I'm going, are you kidding me? Y'all have to beat the kings of the Pac-12 tournament, which are the Arizona Wildcats. Didn't do it. Lost by 11. All right? Here's the other problem. UCLA has an outside distraction named LeVar Ball who won't shut up.
Yeah. That's why a lot of people are rooting against UCLA. If UCLA goes quickly, then that will set up LeVar Ball. So certainly there's going to be a lot of people rooting for UCLA to go out early and to set up LeVar Ball. Or LeVar Ball would just begin Lonzo Ball's draft preparation early on. So start hyping up the next set of Ball that will be coming to UCLA. So it's get used to it with LeVar Ball.
Yeah. And my South representative – painted Carolina blue.
I'm going with Carolina as well. I don't think Carolina goes all the way because, like I said, I'm big on guard play in the NCAA tournament. I think Carolina's guard play isn't going to quite be good enough. And defensively, obviously that's not their forte either. My final four is Duke, Arizona, North Carolina, Louisville. Yours is Villanova,
Arizona,
North Carolina, you're going with
Michigan. I'm going with
Michigan.
I'm going to call the upset. Michigan makes.
Fair enough. Who's your national champion on April 3rd?
April 3rd, my national champion wears red and blue. The Arizona Wildcats will cut the nets down.
Fair enough. It's possible. I'm going to go with Louisville for two reasons. One, the play of Donovan Mitchell, the guard I was referring to before, just does everything. Sets the tone for them. Louisville is very sound defensively, very well coached. And they have a lot of motivation. Keep in mind, remember what happened with Rick Pitino and the whole dorm and all those kids and everything that was going on there?
Yes.
Louisville is in the process of surviving that. You want to talk about a great
motivation, a great emotional edge. Kind of like Michigan, Louisville's kind of caught the same thing going for them. I mean, what a way to turn that whole thing around with another national championship at Louisville, another one for Rick Pitino, to combine with Denny Crum, you know, when he was coaching there back in the day when never known as Purvis Ellison was playing there. So I like Louisville in terms of their overall great guard play, how well coached they are, but the motivation that they have. I feel the same about North Carolina, but Louisville will take on North Carolina one final four. And, yeah, Arizona, as long as they can score, because we know how good they are defensively, but they have to put the ball in the basket efficiently enough to make that pay off, and that's been a problem of Sean Miller teams over the years. So if they can score efficiently to go along with the great defense we know they're going to play, then they got a great shot.
Well, here's a number for you. During the Pac-12 tournament, Arizona shot 51% from the field. When they get hot, they get hot. And plus, Arizona wants to do what Illinois did in 95, and that's basically stay home. They play this game in Phoenix. They'll sell out University of Phoenix Stadium. That's why
I think that would be the first time a college played, you know, technically in their home area, actually, for a national championship happens.
No, that is not true. The last team that played in its home, not only its home state, but its home city, they didn't win at all, was Butler in 2010 when they lost to Duke by two.
Oh, in Indianapolis. Yeah.
At Lucas Oil Stadium.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I stand corrected.
And what, a run that was by the Butler Bulldogs. They could do it again.
By the way. Back-to-back years. I mean, they weren't just a fluke. I mean, Butler over the years, you know, kind of like Gonzaga, you know, just one of those teams lying in the weeds, and then they kind of come up and beat some people, and you say, who the heck is this team? And you realize they're pretty good.
Butler could do it again. Butler could definitely – if Butler gets to Milwaukee, the biggest trouble they'll have is North Carolina. But even that frightens me. Even that frightens me. Butler could be one of these teams that could – Butler could be like Northwestern and get not only to the regional final but get to Phoenix, Arizona. But it would take a Herculean effort for Butler to take down North Carolina the same way it would take a Herculean effort from Northwestern to beat Arizona. Would I love to see both of those? Hell yeah, I would. Who am I kidding?
Would be interesting. One thing's for sure. It's the greatest tournament in sports. Let the madness begin. Let the upsets rain down. But it looks like we're going mostly chalk as far as the Final Four would go. So it could be the excitement is going to be limited to the first three rounds leading up to the Sweet 16. Then it may go chalk after that. But you never know. Because even though there's a lot of mid-majors that are impressing a lot of people these days, that doesn't mean they're out there. So we'll see what happens. One more question I'm going to ask you is the 12-5 upset, a 12 beats a 5 every single year. I'm going to say Princeton beats Notre Dame out of the West. I just love these Ivy League schools in these 12-5 matchups. They seem to thrive in these situations. So I have Princeton taking on Notre Dame, the patented 12-5 first-round upset that we see every year. What about yours?
Middle Tennessee State is the one that's screaming at me. 2 years ago, they did the same thing, and it took double overtime to do it against Purdue. Oh, that was last year, against Purdue. Minnesota better not be looking the other way, or Middle Tennessee will get him again.
No, you don't. If you are a 5 seed going up against a 12 seed, and you're at least mildly aware of history of this tournament, you don't want to look the other way whatsoever. It's just every year we can count on this. You know, LeBron James going to the finals, birthdays, Christmas, Thanksgiving, and a 12 beating a 5 in the NCAA tournament.
Every year. And both of the ones we just talked about could happen. Middle Tennessee is the 12-5 I'm looking at.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's close out the show with this. Knucklehead and Man Crush of the Week, or that guy, or whatever you came up with last week.
so here's your sign award.
First Man Crush. Anyone in the world of sports that you are man crushing on right now?
Chris Collins, because he brought my Wildcats to the tournament. Plain and simple.
Makes all the sense in the world.
Makes all.
How about you? Who are you man crushing on this week?
My man crush this week?
Who's your man crush this week?
So many choices. But I got to go with Rob Pelinka of the Lakers. I think he won the press conference. And we know how important that is. He was passionate. He said all the right things.
Yep.
He appeared to under-promise, to over-deliver eventually. Rob Pelinka had a great press conference last week. And I loved his smile. You know, I loved how he and Magic Johnson did kind of a high-five handshake. You know, when Magic turned it over to him, actually, I thought that was a great – And the smile that Rob flashed at Magic – you know, I think Rob Pelinka is man crushing on Magic Johnson right now. Actually, that moment and how he handled that press conference, which I thought was good under the circumstances, I'm man crushing on Rob Pelinka right now, baby. But we'll see how he does from there, because my man crush could easily turn into knucklehead status if he starts screwing up Allergen Bus. So, Rob, you have my support for right now. Don't mess it up. So, that's my man crush of the week.
You know, Chris Collins got mine after Northwestern was called during the selection show.
There you
go.
So we're going with leaders. We're going with coaches and executives. How about that? So we'll round the show like that. Most people would choose players. I chose an executive. You chose a coach. That's our greatness right there. We stand out that way. Because most people wouldn't think of what we just thought of. What about your knucklehead of the week?
I'm going to give it to a network, ESPN, for creating the Saturday Showcase.
Espen? I have to figure out what ESPN stands for. Entertainment Sports Programming Network. How about every single program, an M word that's negative, every single program is nitrogen. I don't know. Or something to that effect. You know what? I'm sorry.
Every single program
is not worth it. How about that? Every single program is not worth it. I'm kind of forcing it there.
I love
it. Every single program is not worth it. So not worth it is one word.
I'll take it.
My knucklehead of the week. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Jerry Jones. You know, I mean – Or the fake news aficionados out there. You know, so between Jerry Jones and the fake news aficionados out there, that is enough knuckleheadism to last me for the rest of the year, honestly. Just ridiculous what's going on down there. So
it'll at least last you till August when everybody reconvenes again.
After May 1st, you know, apparently, you know, or June 1st, you know, if they dump them at the right time, there's salary cap relief and all that stuff, so we may not have resolution on this until after the Lakers have that hearing in May with Jim Buss, Johnny Buss, and Jeannie Buss. So this might go a while longer, ladies and gentlemen. So we'll just wait for that at this point, because I suspect after last week's brouhaha regarding this that we might not hear so much about it, because I'm pretty sure sports reporters out there aren't going to want to touch this or make any definitive statements. Otherwise, they might be made fools of as well. So we'll see what happens with that. Brian, a pleasure. Love to have you back next week.
Thank you.
You're willing to come back next week.
I am. Thank you so much for this.
Thank you for the cartoon memories as well. Great, great show. We are out of here. You've been listening to Brian. Check him out on Arena Sportsnet as well as on Twitter. And remind us of the Twitter handle.
Golden Voice Snow is how you can find me on Twitter as well as Instagram.
Golden Voice Snow on Instagram and Twitter and Arena Sportsnet. And, of course, Sport Diehards on Facebook, Radio AFS. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, enjoy the tournament. And always remember that.
And you're upset.
You're thinking about what's riling you up in the world of sports over the next week. And call us next week, 646-668. 8467. Thank you, everybody, for listening. You've been listening to the Sport Diehards featuring the Snowman, a blizzard of opinions and hot takes. You got it all tonight, and we are ending just in time here. So have yourself a great week,
and we will talk to you next week. This is the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS, brought to you by Gallagher's Pub and Grill. We do this because sports is everything. Good night, everybody.